This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Sister Thea Bowman was a powerful force for civil rights across the country, including in La Crosse. The Franciscan Sister of Perpetual Adoration dedicated much of her life striving for equality and working for the African American community. Next month, her fellow sisters will commemorate the 25th anniversary of her death. Here today to talk about the legacy of Sister Thea Bowman is Sister Patricia Teekip. She's with the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration, and Dr. Deborah Jackson Pembleton. She's a former student of Sister Thea, and she's currently a professor at the College of St. Benedict and St. John's University. Thank you two so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
So I'm wondering, who would like to talk about Sister Thea's early life? She grew up in Mississippi.
Yes.
And she didn't grow up Catholic. She decided to convert to Catholicism as a young girl, which is fascinating to me. Deborah, can you tell us more about her?
Certainly. She grew up in Canton, Mississippi, my hometown, and with Mississippi being a very strong Southern Baptist area, we were embedded in a Protestant community. And the Holy Child Jesus School is where we both attended. She, of course, many years before me. And she loved the church. She loved Catholicism. She loved the sisters. And that was a great deal of her influence to become converted to Catholicism.
And, I mean, what was it like for you, since you went to the same school as her, was there something special about that school and about the sisters at that school, you know, within Canton?
Absolutely. When I was growing up, and also for Sister Thea, the sisters at our school were social activists. We grew up in a time of civil rights, when the civil rights were being fought by African Americans in the South, and many other groups as well, along with African Americans. And the sisters stood alongside us. Father Luke stood alongside us. And encouraged us and motivated us. And Sister Thea was a part of that motivation. She was a part of that inspiration, a part of making us all feel as though we could go farther and be bigger and go all over the world.
Was there something about the sisters that maybe had a specific moment? There was a specific point in time when Sister Thea decided, this is my calling. I want to be a part of these women.
I would suppose, though I haven't talked with Sister Thea about this, that it's like the discernment that many of us, that most of us do in our lives, that we are lured a certain direction by our own interests, that we're drawn to make choices that will fulfill what is inside us, that will bring out the best. Sister Thea talked about admiring the sisters who came to Canton and the goodness in their lives and the generosity in their reaching out. And that was surely what was inside her. And so in her joining the sisterhood, she knew that would grow, that would be encouraged.
So she moved from Mississippi to La Crosse to join the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration.
Exactly, when she was about 15,
I think. Wow. So
she was still in high school. She spent 2 years at St. Rose High School following up on the good education she got. I mentioned to Deborah yesterday that Sister Thea, when she started at Holy Child Jesus School, she was very bright but had not had a good school system before this. So the first year, she made 3 years' progress in reading. That's just the kind of person she was. And she loved learning, and she thought all of her students should love learning as well. And was disappointed when not everyone was quite so enthusiastic about the academic world as she was.
And then she eventually went on to Viterbo University when
exactly.
She went through the convent. And what did she study when she was at Viterbo?
I don't recall for sure, but she probably majored in English because her doctorate was in English and linguistics. She became a Faulkner scholar. We talked about Faulkner a little bit earlier. She spoke every year at the Faulkner Conference in Mississippi for 8 years or something like that. Until the rest of her life became too busy.
Do you know what drew her to Faulkner so much?
Probably his roots in Mississippi.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's worth noting that Sister Thea was the first African-American Franciscan Sister of Perpetual Adoration. Deborah, was that anything she thought much about? I mean, when it comes to like that historic moment?
I was her student. So I was in elementary school when she would come back to teach us and to motivate us and to sing with us. I think combining her love of God with the pursuit of education and knowing that education can help you to overcome many of the obstacles that we face in the South, I think that combined really helped to motivate us.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking about the legacy of Sister Thea Bowman, a Franciscan sister of perpetual adoration who dedicated her life to civil rights and spent part of her time in La Crosse. My guests today are Dr. Deborah Jackson Pembleton. She's a former student of Sister Thea and is currently a professor at College of St. Benedict, St. John's University, and Sister Patricia Teakip. She's with the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration. So, Deborah, can you tell us a little more about what it was like being a student of Sister Thea? Because I never met her, but I've been watching many videos of her, and she is incredibly charismatic.
She's so enthusiastic, and her enthusiasm was contagious. And when she would come and speak to us during that time in the late 60s, it would be like a breath of fresh air. It would be like a shining light. We would be able to see that so many things are possible, even though within our community, it did not represent an environment that seemed as though we could go beyond the boundaries of Canton, Mississippi. And her work and her words and her experiences here at Viterbo motivated us to want to go to college, want to travel the world. As a matter of fact, four of my classmates, high school graduating classmates, came here to Viterbo.
Really?
Specifically because of Sister Thea.
Oh, wow. And was she one of the reasons that you decided you wanted to study outside of Canton after high school?
She was absolutely one of the reasons. My parents studied outside of Mississippi, and of course they were the primary motivators, and they taught us, as well as Sister Thea's parents taught her, that education and having a good education is a stepping stone to having a better life.
So you said she would come and visit. What would she teach you when she would come to visit?
We would sing. We would feel empowered. She would tell us how we could be empowered, how we could do anything, how we could go anywhere. And we would sing, and we loved to sing with her. We were given strict instructions by the sisters, of course, to be on our best behavior when she came. And when she came, you wouldn't necessarily say that she was on her best behavior. Because she would be rollicking with laughter. I mean, her whole body would just embrace the music. Her whole body would embrace education and learning, and she would just be this glowing light for us.
I actually want to play a clip right now. I found there's a really wonderful short documentary that the University of Mississippi's Center for the Study of Southern Culture put together on Sister Thea Bowman. And there's a part where she talks about the importance of music, and then we get to hear her singing with a choir. So I'm going to play this, and then we'll have the two of you talk about it afterwards.
My folks in the beginning could not read or write. They had not been college, and they had not been school, but they could sing those songs, so you can sing them too. I know you can. They sang the songs, and the songs were teachings for their children, and the songs messages from their master, and the songs were comfort for their souls. Now y'all got to sing.
Oh!
hear, I should have mentioned at the beginning because it's a little hard to hear over the choir at first, but she's talking about the role that music plays within the African-American community and within the church. So, I mean, what is it like just being able to still hear her voice and still hear her singing? I imagine that's just incredible.
It warms my heart. It warms my heart. It takes me back to the dreams that I had as a child and the dreams that I had that encouraged me to be able to go anywhere. When I left Canton, Mississippi and went to college, I attended the University of Notre Dame. And Sister Thea did some work there in cross-cultural leadership and in intercultural education, I think in Black studies. And her enthusiasm and her singing is a really big part of what I wanted to do.
And Sister Patricia, I'm assuming you sang more than a few songs with Sister Thea.
A few, not a whole lot of singing with her, but this clip reminds me of what a holistic teacher she was. She engaged all of herself in her teaching, and she drew that kind of response from the students. I also think of a story that's in the book Thea's Songs, of how she was assigned as a young teacher, assigned by the sisterhood to teach at Blessed Sacrament School in town. And when some of the parents heard about this assignment, that there was going to be a Black sister teaching their students, their children, they were not too pleased with it. And so they called a meeting and...
What year was this?
Would have been around 1961, I think. They called a meeting and the principal was there. And the principal had the wisdom to bring Sister Thea along. And by the time she walked in, her charming, professional, poised self, by the time they finished the 20 minutes or so, the parents were all on Sister Thea's side. She was that winning, and she used that gift of hers, that gift of charm, to promote the cross-cultural understanding that she was known for her whole life, and which Deborah continues at this point in her teaching of international business.
Absolutely, absolutely. When I introduce myself to my students, and my students are primarily from the state of Minnesota. We do have students from other parts of the world, other parts of the country, but I tell them that I'm a Southerner, so that when they hear a Southern vernacular coming from my mouth, they know that I can switch cultures. So a part of all of my classes is singing is a part of all of my classes. Dancing is also a part of my class, in my intercultural business class. So I will tell them in my most professional voice, y'all got to sing in this class. And so they're kind of taken aback because sometimes they don't always hear a Southern accent from me. But I tell them, when I get very passionate, my Mississippi comes out, my Black woman comes out, and you need to sit up and listen and pay attention because I love what I do, and I love being here, and I want you to embrace what I'm teaching and have it be a part of your own lives. This isn't just something that you take a test on and hand it back to the professor. This has to be integrated as a part of your soul.
In similar vein, you know, as Sister Thea brought her story and her life to La Crosse, she may have seen that as maybe a small move in the grand scheme of things, but I'm sure that had a major impact on the students and the families that she worked with in La Crosse, especially in the 60s. Sister Patricia, can you maybe talk about some of the other work similar to that?
That Sister Thea did.
Sure, yes, here in La Crosse.
She spent a few years teaching here in La Crosse, and I wasn't in La Crosse at the same time that she was, for the most part. But when I first came to the convent a few years before that, she had just, she wore the long habit and the black veil, and I would see her at the other end of the hallway just whipping around the corner, and she was so elegant. She caught my eye. She was exotic to me because I came from a farm in Iowa. I don't know if I had ever met a Black person face-to-face before this. And she was almost mystifying just because she was who she was. And then as I got to know her later on, I learned more of the deep principles on which her life was based. She knew she was coming from the South, from a warm culture physically and the environment, but from a culture that was different from northern white Minnesotans, Wisconsinites, Iowans. And when in later years, I said to her, "Sister Thea, how did you ever survive that shock? You know, how did you ever survive in the convent?" And she said, "I had a few people who believed in me." And she mentioned Sister Charlotte Bonneville, who was the head of the English department at Viterbo. And Sister Thea followed in her footsteps. She joined the English department, and then she became the head of the English department in the mid-70s. So that progression in Thea's life, I think it opened up for her too. As with all of us, we can't predict what we're going to be doing in 5 years, but if we make the most of those advantages that come along, we'll be like Sister Thea and have the best effect we can on other people.
So can you talk about some of the work she did in regards to working for equality and working for civil rights? Because I understand you did work side by side with her on some issues.
I never actually lived in the same place where Sister Thea did, except for short times in La Crosse.
Okay.
She started to be asked in La Crosse, I understand, from reading the book, Thea's Song. It was requested of her, would she talk about the black culture, about black experience and so forth, because she was literate, in the sense of being, you know, having a very literary background. She was easy to listen to. She'd always bring songs into her presentations, as Deborah just said. So people loved to have her come and talk. And she knew how to adapt to a sixth grade class or college faculty. She could talk to them and speak to what their interests were. When she was about 40, she had been at Viterbo on a faculty and became the chair of the English department. Then her parents' health was failing in Mississippi. So she decided being an only child, that it would be a good idea to move there and offer the support she could. We had sisters living in the same town, just a few blocks away from, so she wouldn't be isolated in any sense. And when she planned to do that, she went to the diocesan offices in Jackson to meet with Bishop Brunini to check out the job possibilities in the diocese. And Bishop Brunini, sensing the moment, developed a new job for her. He hired her as the diocesan consultant for intercultural awareness, which was a brand new position as of that moment in the diocese. And over the next few weeks, she developed what that meant, how she would act on that, and enthusiastically pursued it.
And Deborah, were you living in Canton at this time? And do you know what maybe came about from
70.
That work?
During that time in 1978, I was actually in college.
Okay.
But when I would come home for Christmas and during the summers, I would hear about the fantastic work that she was doing. She was a part of Holy Child Jesus Parish, and so was I, a member of the parish. And so we would always frequently have announcements about some of the workshops that she was putting on, how she was bringing people together that had not historically worked together or even been in the same room together as equals. And she would help different communities come together and have a better understanding of each other.
And was she reaching outside of the church when you talk about just groups of people who weren't working together?
Outside of the church, just general community workshops in the general community, yes.
And, you know, when you think about it now, is some of that work, do you feel like it's still living on? I don't know, maybe as you talk to friends and family who are still part of the parish?
Yes. I think it's taken different forms. I think things have evolved over time in Mississippi. Even though I don't live in Mississippi, now when I go home, I see greater interaction between the groups. when I was growing up, Holy Child Jesus was the black church and Sacred Heart was the white church. And we did not do things together, even though the churches were only a few miles apart. But just a few years ago at Sacred Heart, there was a Sister Thea Bowman celebration. And growing up, that never would have happened. So I think that it is a part of the community now. Sister Thea is a part of everybody's community now in Mississippi.
Sister Patricia?
Another way that that Sister Thea's influence would be felt, I think, is in something we spoke of yesterday, Deborah, the number of students from Holy Child Jesus, graduates from Holy Child Jesus, who have gone on to professional lives where they've been very influential. I remember when I was visiting Mississippi, it was one of the last years of Sister Thea's life, one of the local news anchors on TV was a graduate of Holy Child Jesus. Now, that probably wouldn't have happened without Holy Child Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And the influence, the confidence that the students received as part of their education there. If Sister Thea can do it, there's a chance
everybody. That's right.
And she's had, even since then, six schools across the country named after her, which is incredible. I mean, she's a foundation. There's a women's center, what I understand, named after her. And I'm sure each of those students are learning about her life as they go through each year of school.
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, the reason that I'm here this week doing research at Viterbo and at
St. Rose Convent
is because I'm doing a talk at Boston College at the Ahana Thea Bowman Center. And it is a center for intercultural students at Boston College. And that's at the end of March.
What are you hoping to learn and take back that you didn't already know about her?
I have learned just how much we have in common with
like
our lives. I consider myself an interculturalist. I consider myself a kind of person that brings people from different cultures together. While I was aware of Sister Thea's work in that area, I didn't realize to what extent she was really working in the community in Mississippi, because as I mentioned earlier, I was in college at the time, so I wasn't necessarily in close contact with her. But my work as an interculturalist is to help my students to become comfortable with cultures other than their own. For example, just last week, I brought in some students from Japan who just had a conversation with my students in my organizational behavior class. And we talked about what that experience was like for them afterwards and if they were able then to move to a higher comfort level in working with someone outside of their own culture. So I do a great deal of integrating that into my classes.
And in what ways was Sister Thea an interculturalist?
During the few years in the mid-70s when she was on the Viterbo faculty, she developed the first Native American course, Native American literature, I think it was, at Viterbo. And she had some Ho-Chunk couple come and help to teach that. And then they had, she got grants from the federal government to have a performance of Ho-Chunk culture that would extend the influence of what they were doing in the classroom to involve more people from the community.
Wow.
The first one at Viterbo.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Today we're talking about the legacy of Sister Thea Bowman. She's a Franciscan sister of perpetual adoration who dedicated her life to civil rights and also spent a good chunk of her life in La Crosse. My guests today are Sister Patricia Teekip, she's with the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration, and Dr. Deborah Jackson Pembleton. She's a former student of Sister Thea and is currently a professor at College of St. Benedict and St. John's University. So, Deborah, I'm curious, when you look at the Catholic Church, and you look at the influence that Sister Thea has had on the Catholic Church, especially when it comes to the African-American community, I mean, how massive was her influence? Did she change much?
I think she's partially, if not entirely, responsible for gospel music coming into the Catholic Church. And I brag about that everywhere I go. We have a gospel choir at St. Peter Claver Church in St. Paul, where I'm a member. We sing gospel music at Holy Child Jesus. And if I go to a major city anywhere in the United States, I know that I can find a Catholic church that has gospel music.
She created the first hymnal that was kind of based on gospel music, correct?
Yes, yes. It's the music that stirs your soul, and it makes you want to reach out and embrace people.
I want to play another clip of Sister Thea Bowman, and she's talking about, she addressed back in 1989, it was actually shortly before she passed away, she addressed the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference, and the main theme of the talk was what it's like, what does it mean to be black in the church? What does it mean to be black in America? And it's a very moving speech. We'll put a link up on our website to the speech. But I'm going to play this, and I want you two to maybe just talk about what's going through your head afterwards.
What does it mean to be black and Catholic? It means that I come to my church fully functioning. That doesn't frighten you, does it? I come to my church fully functioning. I bring myself, my black self, all that I am, all that I have, all that I hope to become. I bring my whole history, my traditions, my experience, my culture, my African-American song and dance and gesture and movement and teaching and preaching and healing and responsibility as gift to the church. I bring a spirituality that our black American bishops told us. They just told us what everybody who knew. That spirituality is contemplative and biblical and holistic, bringing to religion a totality of minds and imagination, of memory, of feeling and passion and emotion and intensity. A faith that is embodied, incarnate praise. A spirituality that knows how to find joy even in the time of sorrow. That steps out on faith, that leans on the Lord. A spirituality that is communal, that tries to walk and talk and work and pray and play together. Even with the bishop. You know, when our bishop is around, we want to be where we can find him, where we can reach out and touch him, where we can talk to him. Don't be too busy, y'all. A spirituality that in the middle of your mass or in the middle of your sermon just might have to shout out and say, amen, hallelujah, thank you, Jesus.
That's just 2 minutes of a 35-minute speech that she gave to a room full of mostly old white men. And she had them completely captivated.
She did. I think of the video that goes with that. Here is this frail-looking woman in a wheelchair.
Because she had breast cancer.
She was in the last stages of cancer. Sure. She had to travel in a wheelchair because there was too much danger of her stepping down too hard on her foot and breaking a bone. Her bones were so riddled with the cancer. But she still accepted speaking engagements on condition that she might not be feeling well enough. So here is this frail-looking woman who had lost her hair from the cancer treatment, sitting in a wheelchair, kind of huddled in a wheelchair, very thin by that time. And she's calling out these powerful ideas to the bishops. By the end of the time together, she had them crossing arms with each other, holding hands and singing, "We Shall Overcome," and she... If they didn't move, she said, "Come on now, Bishop Pond, this is, hold hands. This is how we did it in the days of the civil rights, the fight for civil rights." She had them singing "We Shall Overcome," and the cameraman caught a tear trickling down the cheek of Cardinal Law on that occasion. It's in the video that goes with this audio.
But, I mean, Deborah, when you hear that, what do you think about that clip from her?
I think about the possibilities that were created for those of us in communities like Canton, Mississippi, how we can be empowered, how we can reach out, how we can be strong spiritually, how we can go beyond limitations that may have been placed upon us internally or externally, and be a light for others, and to reach across cultures, reach across races, so that we can pull to people together.
Do you think that Sister Thea would say today there is still a lot of work that needs to be done when it comes to race relations and civil rights within the Catholic Church?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a great deal of work to be done. I think we've made a great deal of progress, but there's still a great deal of progress that has to be done.
Sister Patricia?
There are laws on the books now that prevent racist hiring practices, for example. There are laws on the book, and they're followed sometimes better than others. The part that Sister Thea adds to that is the awareness of other cultures that all of us need to develop, the awareness and appreciation for other cultures. So the laws on the books can accomplish something, but all of us, as we live our lives and interact daily, need to add the layer of awareness and appreciation for the beauty of other cultures. It makes life so much richer.
Is there work being done to really carry on Sister Thea's legacy within the Catholic Church?
Each of the schools that you mentioned, named for her,
sure,
for example, have an effect with their students, of course, and the ripples that go out from any school in that civic community. There's also a Sister Thea Bowman Foundation, which provides scholarship money for students to go to Catholic universities and colleges.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the Women's Center that's been named after her as well.
Women's Center, various smaller programs. Mm-hmm. We get word of something new like that developing every few months. And Sister Charlene Smith, who wrote this book, Thea's Song, is the focus for those. She receives those pieces of information and posts them online for us. On the FSPA website, there is a segment for Sister Thea's story and for ongoing work in Sister Thea's name. Just the fact that 25 years after, we're celebrating her homegoing, her passing to glory, mm-hmm, says something about how much she still affects people who learn about her even after her death. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the center at Boston College, as I mentioned before, the Ahana Sister Thea Bowman Center, and that provides an opportunity or a place for students to go and feel comfortable and to relate to other students.
So, Sister Patricia, you mentioned before that FSPA will be celebrating her life, and that is next month in March. There's going to be a number of events going on. There's going to be panel discussions. There's an art display. There's a mass celebrating her life. I know there's going to be some informational sessions on women if they're interested in joining the sisterhood. Why is it important to celebrate and really focus so much time and energy to Sister Thea?
She's still only our only African-American member of the sisterhood ever.
Oh, really? Wow.
So it's time for more after 25 years.
Hmm.
It is an opportunity we have, because Sister Thea was a member of our sisterhood, because she took that big step from Mississippi to La Crosse. The FSPA have learned some things, have had the opportunity for some sensitizing that most people haven't had the occasion for. So however we can use that richness in our own background to reach out to others, however we can use Sister Thea's story, the book, the video, any of the pieces about her, the magazine articles that have been written, however we can use her story to continue to lift people up and to say, all God's children are beautiful, which was one of her lines. All God's children are beautiful, and believe it more deeply all the time ourselves, and convince the young children growing up especially that they have a place in the world, and we need all of them.
When you mentioned that she used to say, all God's children are beautiful, Deborah, I want to ask you about the 60 Minutes interview that Sister Thea did with Mike Wallace back in the 1980s, I'm assuming?
About 1984, I think.
Okay. But can you tell us about that interview and what she had Mike Wallace say at the end, which I just absolutely love?
She had him say, "Black is beautiful." And she expressed the importance of having the children of Holy Child Jesus say, "Black is beautiful." And she explained to him how it was important for the children of Holy Child Jesus in the African American community in Canton, Mississippi, to say "Black is beautiful" because they did not consider themselves beautiful. Many did not. And he looked at some of the writings of some of the students, and those writings reflected that. And she described how she helped students to feel their beauty and to understand and appreciate their beauty. And she said to him, "I still haven't heard you say, 'Black is beautiful.'" And Mike Wallace said it, "Black is beautiful." And when that encounter took place, it was like an awakening for those of us in Canton, Mississippi. Number one, for a woman to be telling a man that to say something is it was outstanding. It was empowering. For a black woman to be telling a white man that statement, to say black is beautiful, was something that was strengthening. And for someone who was from a small town to be telling this international figure to state black is beautiful was confirming to people who did not feel that black is beautiful to feel as though black is beautiful, that's who we are, that's how we are valued, that's how we are seen, that is who we are. And it was almost like a celebration in Canton, Mississippi when he made those statements.
Is there anything else that the two of you want to talk about when it comes to Sister Thea or her lasting legacy, you know, either just in the public's eye or in your own personal lives, too?
One thing I want to emphasize, Maureen, is that in the announcement, the observances that we're going to have the last week of March, the Mass on Sunday with Father Maurice Nutt as the celebrant, even for people who can't join us at St. Rose, at the Mother House, it is going to be streamed live on the Franciscan Sisters website. So you just need to tap into that and can enjoy and sing along at home.
And Deborah, do you have any final thoughts on Sister Thea's lasting legacy, either, you know, on a global scale or in your own life?
Well, most definitely on a global scale. She has been an influence for me. I do a great deal of research in Asia. And part of the reason I go to Asia is because I don't look like the people there. And I have worked through feeling comfortable in what might be an uncomfortable situation for people. And I try to communicate that to my students, that if they go into a community, whether that's here in the United States or whether it's in Asia or any continent, that if they are not like the people there, it's just a process of working through that will help them to be comfortable outside of their comfort zone. And that's what I integrate into my classroom. And I think that is definitely directly from Sister Thea.